Hi there, I'm Lewis Foster, a journalist up here at Manx Radio. Thank you for choosing this episode of Newscast. Old wounds have been opened for a rape victim on the island after learning her perpetrator will soon face the parole committee. The victim, who will not be named to protect her identity, was 19 years old when she was attacked as she was about to enter the back door of her home. Her attacker was sentenced to life in prison. He's expected to go before the parole committee soon, but his victim believes she's been let down by the justice system. This following interview with Manx Radio's Chanel Suku contains details some listeners may find distressing.
I can't stop thinking about it. And although I try and, you know, think of other things, it's just there at the back of my mind all the time. It was early hours in the morning and I was walking home. I walked up and around the corner and then walked up home. He basically followed me. I went down into a back lane to go into the house and I just felt these hands around my mouth and just sort of being pushed forward and kind of like trying to throw me to the floor. I resisted as much as I could. He pushed me up against the wall, tried to punch me a couple of times. He did get me punched me once and I think that knocked me over, and then next thing I remember sort of being on the floor, and then one thing led to another, and you know, he was then, you know, raping me. Next thing, he's got his hands around my throat and started to choke me. I literally had to pretend to be dead because I just didn't think it was going to stop. And then he walked away and I just lay there really still for as long as I could. I thought he was gone, but next thing I heard some footsteps coming back and he grabbed my ankles and he pulled me into a dark part of the lane and sort of got some leaves, you know, fallen off leaves and stuff, and threw them over me. And as soon as I knew that he was gone, I jumped up and ran in and raised the alarm.
He was sentenced to 15 years, correct?
I mean, it was a life sentence he was given. But I just kind of, at the time, I thought, well, he's got away with attempted murder there. I just don't understand what is the point in a life sentence if life doesn't mean life. Why are you giving people life sentences and then letting them out? He was in prison and had attacked people twice before he attacked me. I think he was out for a week or 2 weeks, or it was, you know, a very small amount of time that he had been released from prison, and he was out on a license, and he was also in prison on a life sentence. He was given another life sentence and they're still wanting to release him again. And it's just like, once bitten, twice shy. Like, this person is never going to learn. He should never have been out to attack me. I feel hugely let down, yeah.
Have you tried to voice your opinions with him? Have you tried to take it up?
It's hard to know where to go, to be honest. I mean, the only support I've had was from victim support. I didn't really sort of, you know, contact them too much. I'm gobsmacked at the situation that it is and how I'm being fed this information that I have no control to do anything over, because I do feel like victims aren't getting looked after. I feel like this is all for him. If there's anything that I can do to stop any of this happening, then I want to do it. But also, yeah, to sort of make other people realise that there's so many more people on these streets that should not be on these streets.
So what processes does the island have to ensure victims are protected and their perpetrators don't re-offend? I spoke with Justice and Home Affairs Minister Jane Paul Wilson and Declan Crawley, the Community Rehabilitation and Family Court Welfare Officer for the Prison and Probation Service.
First of all, of course, I think certainly I understand, and I know the Prison and Probation Service understand, that for a victim and their families, of course there will be anxiety and concern because of the trauma and the harm that they have experienced. I think in terms of the assurance, though, I think it's really helpful that we're able to have this discussion today, because it gives us an opportunity to talk about the intensive and detailed work that goes on in terms of the work at the prison before any prisoner is recommended for release. And that is very much all about the risk that they individually might pose in the community. But also, I think the other thing is that if they are recommended for release, it's important to understand that, and certainly in the case of the most serious prisoners, they're not just released into the community without any checks and management at all. They are released on license. the licence will have specific conditions and requirements which are very much tailored to that individual. And then there is service, statutory service resource and management around that. And I'm glad we've got Declan here with us today, because he's very much involved in that and can talk about some of the specifics and the detail, because it is really important, I think, to offer that assurance and help people understand how much work goes into this.
We'll go to you then, Declan, with that. Just tell us a bit about the work that goes in the years that prisoners are held here and in the months leading up to their release as well.
Yeah, thank you, Lewis. I think it's key to get the message out that the assessments that take place with a prisoner prior to the release is very extensive, and they're multidisciplinary in their approach. So really, to describe multidisciplinary, it involves the assessments by probation officers, by prison staff, by forensic psychologists, by mental health professionals if required, and also our colleagues in social services if required. So it's not taken lightly, or it's not taken by one individual. We also too rely a lot on our police colleagues in relation to potential intelligence, but also too in relation to how we rigorously analyse some of the factors that have contributed to why someone found themselves in prison in the first place. It takes place over a long period of time, and for our more serious offenders, our forensic psychology team are critical in relation to identifying what those risks are, coming up with a case formulation and how we will try to address those risks, and then actioning that. And what I mean by actioning that is the development of an intervention, and it's an intervention which will specifically, for example, target violent behaviour, target the reasons why that violent behaviour happened and what was the context to that, and work with that individual to reduce those risks. It's a long process, not without its difficulties, but the team I'm working for, or working with, I should say, at the moment, are crucial and pivotal, I would say, in reducing the person's risk. The key message of what I also say is that whenever someone is put forward for a parole application, so they have reached a particular time within their sentence where they're eligible to go for parole, that really is then the impetus for us to pull all of this information together and put it into a parole dossier for our parole committee to assess.
And we were talking about what happens after release as well, and you're just describing the, say a regular week in a released prisoner's life, and the communications they will have, and the measures that will be put in place to ensure they are keeping on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, when someone is released from prison, and if they meet the criteria of being a high risk, particularly along the lines of offences of a serious violent nature or a serious sexual nature, they will come into our public protection arrangements. So the public protection arrangements is a multidisciplinary approach with our colleagues in police, prison, mental health if required, and social services if required. The key thing within those arrangements is that we communicate on a regular basis with each other, and we hold that person to account in and as part of those public protection arrangements. When someone's released, and if they were deemed to be someone who was going to maybe be difficult to manage in the community, we will have them in a hostel, which has got 24-hour staffing coverage, which can keep a good eye on that individual. They will possibly be subject to GPS tagging, which allows us at any given time to know where that individual is. The GPS tagging is accurate up to 10 to 20 metres on the Isle of Man, and it has been and we've been using that particular approach now for quite a while. We also too work in tandem with our colleagues in the police, and also with our colleagues, for example, if you have someone who has maybe got enduring mental health conditions, again, we'd work very closely with our colleagues in crisis team, within the mental health teams at Manon and Court. And all of that information is fed into the central meetings that we have within the public protection. we share that information with each other, and I think that's crucial to get that message across. We do have protocols in place that allows us to share that information quickly, swiftly, and if need be, then we can respond quickly and swiftly if someone was to not adhere to their licence conditions.
And we'll talk about public perception now then, because, like you say, we hear phrases like life should be for life. Those kind of immediate reactions can be quite negative when you hear about a prisoner, especially one, like you say, high profile, really quite serious crimes being released. How do you manage that, and how do you give assurances to the wider public as well?
So I think it's an important point, Lewis, and our sentencing framework, you know, when somebody is sentenced, then the custody rules that exist, the legal framework in which we operate, means that once somebody is in prison, if they are responding to all of the intervention work that can happen in prison, there are points in any prisoner's sentence when, as Declan has explained, you can become eligible for parole. Now, it is not an automatic right for you to be released, but you can at that point, with all of the intelligence and information and background work that's been going on around the offending behaviour and how the detainee has been responding to interventions in the prison, you can at that point determine whether or not the individual would pose a risk in the community or not, and then a recommendation would go forward to the parole committee. Now, the parole committee is made up of lay members from the Isle of Man who will look at all the professional information. But obviously, like all citizens in the Isle of Man, they are interested in ultimately that end decision as to whether it is the right point for a prisoner to be released into the community. And so they will look at the recommendation that's been made, but they may not accept the recommendation and they may say, well, the prisoner should have some more work in prison. But ultimately, under our sentencing and our legal framework, we cannot hold people in detention indeterminately if there aren't grounds to do so. And by that, I mean they have fulfilled their full sentence and they are deemed by all the professionals involved that the risk, any residual risk that they remain, that remains, can be managed in the community through the sorts of measures that Declan has said. I should also say, though, that for the most serious offences, so for life sentence prisoners, for example, even on release, they will be released on licence and that licence will remain in place for the duration of their life. So it is then possible, if that individual acted in a certain way, perhaps reoffended or breached their licence conditions in a way that enabled the department to operate what's called a recall mechanism. So there are sort of controls and risk management processes in and around all of this. And I think that's the really important point for the public to understand. There is not a sort of simple cutoff where people no longer recognise that what led to that person being imprisoned was a very serious matter. And whilst under the legal framework and all the work that's gone on, they may be eligible for release into the community, it is absolutely recognised that the terms on which they're released into the community remain in place and are closely supervised and managed.
And you were talking, we've heard in recent years about certain prisoners who were held over in the UK being brought back to the Isle of Man, and just explain why that's done and how it affects the licence that they're released on as well.
Yes, so I guess there are potentially two categories of prisoners. Sometimes we have people in our prison here who are not from the island, so they've offended in the island and they've been convicted here and they serve their sentence here. It is possible, though, for those individuals, when they are released, sometimes to be subject to an exclusion order from the island. The other category, I suppose, are people who are from the island, and particularly some prisoners who've committed very, very serious offences have then been sent to the UK to serve the bulk of those sentences. And in part, that's a recognition of the fact that our prison service probably traditionally has not been able to provide all of the interventions that may be required with those very, very serious prisoners. However, when they are nearing the end of their sentence, the process that operates is that they are returned to the Isle of Man to continue that process of risk assessment leading up to a potential release. And I think what's important about the fact that they come back to the island and have and are managed through our own processes is that we get to determine on the island whether or not parole is suitable, but also the license conditions and management of that offender. The risk, I think, would be great that if they were released from the UK without any control at all on the part of our own prison and probation service, they could travel back to the island and there would be no management in place on the island. So the preferential view is it's better for us to manage that risk ourselves by returning the prisoner here and having the opportunity to do full risk assessment ourselves and full management of the license conditions and the supervision of those should they be eligible for release.
I'll come back to you about rehabilitation. You were saying it's quite an exciting time, I suppose, in your career in terms of the developments and the processes and the therapies in particular that you are going through with prisoners and with families as well. Just talk us through those and about some of the laws that are coming up. We've got the Domestic Abuse Act January 4th, I believe. So what's it like at the moment? What are the times like?
I think it's important to recognise that the introduction of we now have three chartered forensic psychologists on working for us on the island. My own experience, really, and I have experience of nearly working in this field for 20 years. It's critical because what they bring to us is the experience and the risk assessment tools that are being used and interventions that are being used are the most current and most up-to-date that we can have. And again, that's using world-renowned intervention tools and interventions. Most recently, we are going to be introducing a intervention package that had been rolled out. It's going to be rolled out in February of this year, where my team of probation officers and prison staff, six prison officers, have all been trained on a intervention called Life Minus Violence. So Life Minus Violence is a programme of work which was devised by Professor Jane Ireland, who again is someone who's quite eminent in this particular field. And the programme takes approximately 12 to 15 months to complete, where an individual has to attend two sessions per week for 3-hour sessions each time. Now, that can be done on an individual level or it can be done within a group. We're going to be setting up groups. So again, it tells you and shows you the intensity of the work that we're doing with people. We're holding people to account, where it's important that people who do find themselves before a court and end up in prison, that they themselves are given the opportunity to try to better understand what led to their committing such an offence, but also too from our perspective that we manage the risk and we have got a good, clear understanding of the risk. With regards to domestic violence, yes, and it's really exciting to know that we now do have got new legislation that's coming into play in January, and I think that's really going to be a game changer, I would say, in relation to people on the island who have potentially been a victim of domestic violence. We now have got the mechanisms and we have got the powers that can really bring us into line with UK legislation that we can hold these perpetrators to account. We can challenge these offences. And again, within the realms of Life Minus Violence, that is going to be a group that we're going to be setting up in relation to that particular type of offending. I think also too, which is important to recognise within this, is the victims. Because the victims, I would say, are critical to the work that I do. They're central in relation to the work that I do. So it's engaging with the victims to ensure that they have got an understanding and a clear ability to actually take action if something like this does happen. And again, that's with the help of my probation officers, my victims unit probation officers, and also to the close relationship that we have with victim support here on the island. Crucial, I would say, in relation to informing and trying to give the victims a more louder voice, because I do find that important. I do think that is very important.
Just had one question came to mind. We've talked a lot about protecting the community from released offenders, but we know sometimes we can see cases in the UK, people who are protected get exposed by certain individuals. It goes on social media and things like that, and it can also become a danger for them. So how do you navigate the opposite way as well and protect those who've been released from harm?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly difficult, and you call to mind actually with your question the wider issue about people who are going through the criminal justice process and social media and commentary and so on. I mean, I think it is incredibly difficult. I know that when we look at future legislation, I've given a commitment, as did my predecessor in this role, to look again at issues like anonymity. Because whilst you can do a certain amount with the regulated press and media, if you like, I think individuals and what they post online and how they comment, that's a much, much more difficult issue. And I suppose it's a plea, really, because for most of us, unless you actually know the full ins and outs of a particular situation, sometimes commenting is incredibly difficult, because you can sometimes say and infer things that may not be the entire picture and cause a lot of problem, not only for the people who've been released, but perhaps the victims of that perpetrator as well. I think it can be a real issue. One other thing I just did want to say, actually, Lewis, is the department, you know, Declan's made the point about involving the victim very much and the voice of the victim in how we approach all aspects of rehabilitation, and also the process of restorative justice where that is appropriate. It's not always going to work, but it can sometimes be a route that is very, very worthwhile to explore. I think the other thing is, I would just like to say that the department remains very open to dialogue with victims and their families. And again, I don't want to mention individual matters at all, but it's absolutely important to me that where there are concerns, that we hear them and we try and understand them. And indeed, I can say that the department has offered specific victim-related support in certain cases with interventions for them, because absolutely it's a difficult thing and people have experienced deep, deep trauma. And it's absolutely right that we, where it's appropriate, can offer some intervention and support for the victim and their families as well.
The word trauma was mentioned there, and it was something you brought up before in terms of certain therapies you can offer for the victims.
Yeah, it is, and very much part of the approach that we take, Lewis, is from a trauma-informed approach, not only with the victim, very much so with the victim, because the minister was talking there about at times when people maybe feel that they need to go to social media. It's highly emotive for people, and I understand that. I can't sit here and pretend to know what it's like to go through some of those things that people have been through, and I wouldn't pretend to know very much so. But from a trauma perspective, it's important that we provide that opportunity for people to engage in counselling if required, but it's very much from a trauma-informed perspective. And it's the same too, I would say to you, in the approach that we do take with the perpetrators of crime. Sometimes they will have had suffered trauma themselves, and particularly when I talk about the wide-ranging people that I come into touch with, from male perpetrators and female perpetrators of crime, everyone, I have to say, will have their own story and will have their own background. So it's important that, again, if required, we take that trauma-informed approach to try to help make someone a better citizen. Because effectively, as the Minister has said earlier, if someone is going to be applying for parole, at which they're eligible to do, and they do come out back into the community, you want to make that person contribute to the community as best you can. And you want to also try to ensure that they possibly don't go down the pathways that they've previously went down. You want to make sure and try their best to make sure that they're a contributing citizen the same as everybody else on the Isle of Man. Now, that may sound aspirational, but at the same time, I do believe that's what, from a rehabilitative ideal, is we want to make that person, or try to make that person, see that they have got worth and see that they have got the ability to make that change. And become somebody who is contributing to society as a citizen of the Isle of Man, the same as everybody else.
Well, I'm reminded of a scene from Shawshank Redemption, particularly when a prisoner is released and there are cars out on the street. He doesn't recognise the society on the outside as he saw it when he went into prison to begin with. And you were saying that can be a serious issue, and that it's a case of relearning.
It can be, yes, because for people who have been in prison for a considerable length of time, we're talking here 10 plus years, 15 years, the world has moved on. And again, it's about trying to then help that person to readjust to life in the community. And that's where I find the work at the hostel that I'm a manager of as well has been instrumental in trying to help people not make the same mistakes that they've made before and not go to their problem solving skills as improved so that they don't make those similar type decisions that they maybe would have relied on before. And it's also given that person a sense of hope. So simple things like getting them into training, developing what ideas they wish to do in relation to getting into training, helping with the simple things of even getting someone registered with a dentist, someone registered with a GP. These are things that we take for granted. But for someone who has been in prison for over 15 years or over 10 years, it can seem like quite a daunting thing. So again, and when you are feel daunted and feel overwhelmed, then in some cases that individual may have relied on substances or alcohol or drugs as a way of trying to cope. So it's about giving that person increased skills to problem solve for themselves, because whilst we'll help at the beginning of the process, you're always going to be wanting to empower them to be able to in time make those decisions themselves. Because not anybody who comes out of prison, again, hopes to have their own accommodation and time. But what I would say is that for the highest risk clients that we have, they will stay in the hostel for a considerable length of time. And I do feel that's important to say, because we're not just going to be letting somebody go to their own accommodation. They'll stay in that accommodation for a considerable length of time before we can then make the assessment to potentially move on to their own accommodation.
One other thing, and again, the department, and I know the probation service wants to work very, very closely with victims and families, is part of the work that goes on at the prison in terms of assessing risk and preparation for any potential release, is that the prisoner or the detainee might go out on certain day release activities and so on. Now, all of that is heavily risk assessed and monitored. But again, very aware that for a victim, or, you know, we're a very, very small community and somebody might see or infer something. So again, you know, we're very keen in terms of the probation department and the department itself to help victims, support them and make sure they understand the process and how it works, so that they do not experience overly high levels of anxiety around that sort of process that is part of the work that goes on to assess risk and determine whether or not and how best somebody might be suitable for parole.
I've been Lewis Foster. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Manx Radio Newscast.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Little Manx Radio Newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.